They may get into your bird feeders, drop twigs on your lawn, and dig up your bulbs, but the squirrels of Iowa are remarkable and fascinating creatures. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Wildlife biologist Jim Pease will be here. This hour, the squirrels of Iowa, from ground squirrels to tree squirrels and those in between. We'll find out about diet, habitat, and habits. We'll learn the proper terminology for ground squirrels, chipmunks, and pocket gophers, debunk a few myths, and find out why we see some very unusual squirrels in some parts of the state. We also want to hear from you. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. There are a lot of squirrels in Iowa, but the individual species often get lumped together. This hour, wildlife biologist Jim Pease will teach us how to tell the 13-lined ground squirrel from the Franklin's ground squirrel and share many other nuggets of useful squirrel knowledge. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning. How are you today?
Very good. Thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, I was just feeling a little squirrely.
It took you 30 seconds to get that in. That's
yeah,
terrific.
I know. I had to do it.
All right. Well, why don't we start at ground level with some of the smaller critters? And I think that a lot of these ground squirrels do tend to get lumped together. I feel like people pick one name and then call
right.
all the little ones by the same
well,
name.
It's interesting because in Iowa, when I was Extension Wildlife Specialist, I began collecting the names of that 13-lined ground squirrels are called around the state. And they have, at last count, 21 different common names.
Wow.
Depending where you are in the state and depending what your heritage was. And
Can you give us a few examples?
Yeah, yeah. Some you can actually repeat on the radio. Squinnies, grinnies, liners. Streakers, streaked gophers, pocket gophers. They're not pocket gophers, of course, but they're sometimes lumped with them. There are just a lot of squinnies and grinnies are often the most common, particularly in central Iowa, but there are lots of other names as well. It's pretty amazing. Picket post is another one. So
wow,
it's quite interesting. So,
now, when we say the full name, when we say 13-lined ground squirrel, that gives you a hint as to how to figure out which ones we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. And the 13-liner is actually never used to be the most common ground squirrel in the state.
Hmm.
Its larger cousin, the Franklin's ground squirrel, which you mentioned in the introduction, was the common squirrel of the tall grass prairie. But its tall grass prairie got replaced by corn and soybeans, shorter pastures, mowed lawns, golf courses, cemeteries, that sort of thing. The 13-lined ground squirrel became much more common. And the Franklin's ground squirrel, in fact, has sort of disappeared. Franklin's ground squirrel, if people are familiar with the about a foot long 13-lined ground squirrel, and it has 13 lines, they're alternating lines on their back. There's sort of a dotted line, a spotted line of spots, and then there's a more solid line. And there are 13 of them if you actually have them in your hand and can count them.
Right, they're not going to hold still long enough for you to count.
But there are multiple stripes on them. And when they run with their tail down. So they scurry across the ground, and they'll run, literally run, with their tail down. The Franklin's ground squirrel that used to be much more common and is very uncommon in Iowa now is a fair bit larger. The body itself is probably 10 inches long, and the tail, both of them have very short hair on the tails, and the tails are not quite quite as long as the body is, so they're a little shorter than their body, so they're not half tail like some of the tree squirrels are. But the Franklin's ground squirrel, a little bit larger and a little browner, and has no stripes on it at all. So they were the common squirrel of the tall grass prairie. The 13 liner, which likes to stand up on its hind haunches and look around, prefers the short grass as a result. They do very, very well in mowed areas adjacent to fields and, as I say, cemeteries and yards and that sort of thing.
And fortunately for them, we have mowed and mowed and mowed.
Yes, we've done very well. We've
created a lot of habitat for them.
Inadvertently. But yes, that's exactly what we've done. And it always amuses me a little bit. I had a situation where a local golf course one time called me and said, gee, I think we've got a badger out here. And I went out to investigate, and I said, well, yeah, you do. But the badger was here after something that you had a bigger problem with before. And they said, what's that? And I said, well, you had quite a population of 13-line ground squirrels. And, oh, yeah, I guess we did. Well, the badger was just cleaning them up. He left bigger holes, but I said, consider it a rough, you know. You know, the holes roll down, the badger holes. Yeah, it's one of those things. So he was merely responding to what was available, and that's exactly what the ground squirrels have done. They have responded to the habitat that is available, and they've been very successful at it.
Where do we see Franklin's ground squirrels now?
Not very many places in the state. There are some places on that we have a few tall grass prairie remnants. We will occasionally see Franklin's ground squirrels there. Or in places where, sometimes in roadsides, where we've reestablished tall grass prairie in a few places. It's not universal. It seems to be, I'm not quite sure exactly what the pattern is, why they occur where they do, but they're very spotty in the state. And where you see them, you'll see a few, but you never see the numbers that we used to at all.
Is this a species of concern since we've seen their numbers dwindle so much?
Yeah, I don't know if it's officially, I haven't checked the list to see if it's officially on the list, but it certainly is a species of concern to those of us who value small mammals in the state, native small mammals. So.
Well, I want to talk a little bit more about the 13-line ground squirrel because so many of us do live with them, and we've already gotten a question about them. This is from Larry in Alden. He says, what do 13-line ground squirrels do with the dirt they excavate when digging their burrows?
That's great. That's a great question. That's always been a mystery. Basically, what they do is they disperse it. Instead of outside their burrow, they disperse it over a larger area. And how they do that, we're not really certain, but they certainly disperse it over an area, and the grass grows up around it then, and you never notice that it's there. So, yeah, they're quite often quite well hidden. Occasionally you'll find some that just kind of deposited outside the door a little bit. But the holes they leave are about the size of a golf ball, maybe
the toe of your shoe.
That's right, yeah. They're often, as I say, quite well hidden. They tend to be more gregarious as well, with at least several generations or relatives living in the same area, if not in connected burrows.
What do they eat?
They eat all kinds of things. As is true with all squirrels, they're opportunistic. Primarily, they're considered vegetarian in nature, eating lots of fruits and nuts and seeds and that sort of thing. But they will add protein to their diet with young birds, eggs, insects, sometimes worms, particularly birds that nest on the ground, small birds, some of the ground sparrows, ground nesting sparrows, are at risk for predation by 13-line ground squirrels, believe it or not.
Wow.
And they're quite effective at it.
Now, we see them so often around houses or around buildings. Do they like to have their burrows near something like a foundation, or does it matter to them?
It doesn't seem to matter. It's certainly common enough, but what's more common, it depends how open the yard is. And people have called me and say, well, I've got squinnies or grinnies or ground squirrels or something in my yard. And I need to know what it is. And I said, well, tell me what your yard is like. Is it very heavily shaded, lots of shrubs or trees or things like that? Or is it very open with very few? And if they say it's very open, I say, well, you probably have 13-line ground squirrels because they're an open prairie ground squirrel. If it's a more wooded habitat kind of area, I say you very likely, particularly if you have rock walls and things like that, you more likely have things like that we call chipmunks. Chipmunks are about the same size as the 13-line ground squirrel, but they have only two stripes on their back, two light stripes on their backs. They're actually surrounded by two black stripes as well, each one is. But they're more darker brown rather than a sandy background color. They're sort of a darker brown. And when they run, they don't run. They tend to hop more like a tree squirrel doing, and they have their tail up. So you can tell the difference right away. If they run with their tails up, it's a chipmunk. If they run with their tails down, it's a 13-line ground squirrel.
All right, and tell me more about the difference between ground squirrels and chipmunks as far as behavior goes. What kind of sets them apart, the chipmunks?
Okay. The hopping is very, very different. They also tend to, and if you actually analyze their hops, you'd see that they lead with both feet, front feet at the same time and land at the same time, whereas the ground squirrels don't. But they climb trees. Chipmunks are more tree squirrel-like, perhaps, than they are ground squirrel. They're sort of right in between, and that's why a lot of geneticists have tended to kind of place them in between the tree squirrels and the ground squirrels. While they will sleep for long periods in the winter, they do not hibernate. A lot of people,
but do the 13-lined ground squirrels?
Yes, they do.
Okay, they're true hibernators.
True hibernators, 13-liners, the Franklin's ground squirrel, and the very large ground squirrel we know as the groundhog, and that's what it is just a large ground squirrel. All three of those are true hibernators, so they will go into very deep sleep. Their metabolism slows way down, and they live off their fat reserves under the ground in a burrow through the winter. While they may occasionally wake up if we have a midwinter thaw, that sort of thing, they usually don't leave the burrow. Chipmunks, on the other hand, are not true hibernators. In some very severe winters, they may go into a temporary torpor, which is somewhat it's not as deep as a true hibernator, but for the most part, they can be active. They'll go into long periods of sleep, like many mammals do through the winter, but they do get up and feed. They have pantries of food, so they will go to those pantries, and they might be in a hollow tree. They might be in a hollow log laying on the ground. They might be in a burrow under the ground. They might be under your deck. But they are active through the winter. So they're very, very different than their cousins, distant cousins, the 13-line ground squirrel.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. My guest today is wildlife biologist Jim Pease, and we're talking about squirrels of all shapes and sizes this hour. You're welcome to join our conversation, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. With me this hour, wildlife biologist Jim Pease, and we are talking about the squirrels of Iowa this hour. We've kept pretty close to the ground so far, and you are welcome to join our conversation with your questions and your observations.
Even with nutty questions, we would take those.
Jim encourages those.
That's right.
866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Now, you mentioned earlier that back when you were the extension specialist for wildlife at Iowa State University, you got a lot of calls about 13-line ground squirrels. You collected their different names. What did people complain about to you? I mean, because often when you got calls from people, they were people saying, hey, I have too many of these.
Yeah, it is. And that's the most common complaint is that, gee, they've made holes in my lawn. And I quite honestly have if you have lots of them, I suppose that's of concern. But I've never been a shall we say a perfect lawn person. I never saw the point in it. You know? I like a more diverse landscape than that, and so. But you know, I had to deal with the fact that some folks really want perfect
lawns. Had different
lawns,
priorities.
So. That's
sure.
Right. That's right. And so I did my extension best to answer those questions and to try and help them decide how best they can manage the populations of ground squirrels. Now. You can, as I've said many times on this program and in many presentations that I've done, you can technically manage the populations, but you are very likely not to control them. You can lower the numbers, in other words, but you are not going to have absolute control because there are other critters that share this earth with us, and they always seem to find ways into habitat that is available.
And especially if you're a perfect lawn person, you've created the perfect environment for the 13-lined ground squirrel. So
yeah.
That, I can imagine that is a problem.
Right, right. You know, there are lots of things available, both things that are effective and things that are not effective, and there are a variety of ways of dealing with it. But it's it often comes down to removal or some sort of trapping, either kill trapping or and there are certainly poisons available as well. But I tend not to recommend those very often because I find them to be. First of all, it's a terrible way to die, I think, for anything to die. And while they can be effective, it is you never know what happens to all the poison.
Right,
it's
and,
still
and
out there,
poison so. Is an indiscriminate killer.
Exactly. So that's a problem, I think. So
I hear you encouraging people to learn to get along with them, or maybe even enjoy them, Jim.
Yes.
Is there sort of a population cap? If you have a bunch of ground squirrels in your yard, does that mean that? Well, that's about the number you'll have. Do they just spread out from there, or could you see the population explode?
Well, I populations generally undulate. They go up and down a lot. So you'll have, under the most natural conditions, a given population of a given species will go up and down. And in your yard, it'll do the same thing, depending upon things like weather, food availability, and the numbers of predators that are around. So in terms of weather, particularly in very cold winters where the frost line tends to go very deep, it tends to catch some of them off guard. And so you will have fewer in the spring because they didn't have enough fat to live off their fat reserves, and the frost line went down below where they were hibernating, and they tend to die in their burrows. So that spring, you'll have many fewer of them around the following spring. So weather certainly impacts them. The amount of rain certainly impacts them. These are ground-dwelling critters, and while they try and make burrows in such a way that the water doesn't leak in, I'm certain that many of them, young ones particularly, because they're born after a few weeks of gestation, they're born with naked and not furred, and so many young ones die in their burrows in very, very wet springs or wet summers. So weather certainly impacts them. Certainly the food supply does. I've tried to encourage people to not feed, including my wife, to not feed the larger seeds, particularly things like peanuts and sunflower seeds through the summer months, because that really provides an ample food supply and increases the litter sizes and increases the health of the ground squirrels. Be they ground squirrels or chipmunks in your lawn, and it simply increases the population. So food supply certainly impacts both litter sizes and the numbers of litters that they have. And then lastly, the number of predators around.
Well, I was just going to ask, beyond house cats and dogs,
yes.
Who eats them?
Oh, Oh, everybody does. Everything from foxes and coyotes to raccoons, skunks if they can get them, hawks, owls, mink, all kind of weasels. Lots of things love to feed on. And it's one of the reasons that these species, particularly the ground squirrels, are so prolific, is that there are lots of things that that feed on them. So they have to have,
lots of babies.
Yeah, lots of young.
Operating on the bunny principle.
Right. Exactly.
So chipmunks, I feel, this is just an observation.
Uh-huh.
Because they're so cute, I feel like people get less annoyed with them. Now, again, with your vast experience, do we give chipmunks a pass because they're adorable?
No.
No, okay.
It's the same
Maybe
sort
that's
of
just
thing.
Personal.
And, yeah, it's very personal, and they do tend to be maybe have cuter faces. I think it's because their ears stick up, and they look more like we don't have Alvin and the ground squirrels. We have Alvin and the chipmunks, you know, that have reinforced this in our cultural experience. So, but I think they have these little ears that stick up, and we think of the Alvin and the chipmunks, and you know, I think it's simply personal. But certainly in terms of damage, not only damage to your lawn, but they will, because they can climb so readily, they will live in your soffits, in your garage, in hollows in trees. They can live in the ground, but they don't have to. They live under your porch, under your garden shed, under any outbuildings that you have. They're very, very adaptable, much more adaptable to urban areas than even 13-lane ground squirrels are, and they're pretty adaptable. So they can do a lot of damage. And like their cousins, they tend to eat all kinds of things, from fruit and nuts to spiders sometimes, insects, moths, as well as eggs and young nestling birds if they can. So they're all sort of will supplement their primarily vegetarian diet with animal protein occasionally.
All right. Well, we have a lot of people who want to ask questions,
okay.
and we want to talk about the squirrels that we see in the trees
right.
also. But before we move on, a lot of people will refer to all of these little creatures as gophers, which we've
yeah.
covered that they're not. But let's talk about the plains pocket gopher, because it does get lumped in there.
Yeah, it does, because they live in the ground and they're small, brown, and furry. And small, brown, furry, live on the ground. They all kind of tend to get lumped together. Plains pocket gopher is entirely different, a totally different species, different group, in fact. And pocket gophers tend to leave large mounds of dirt. They often get confused with moles because of the mounds of dirt that they leave. And they are not a squirrel, although they are certainly a rodent. They're quite a bit larger. They tend not to be seen on the surface of the ground at all. In fact, it's interesting because the Minnesota gophers, I've seen different representations on T-shirts and such of Minnesota gophers, and sometimes they're I think the mascot is more of a gopher, true gopher looking sort of a mascot, but I've seen it occasionally as a 13-lane ground squirrel as well. So you know, even gophers mix it up. So.
All right. You're listening to Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. I'm here with wildlife biologist Jim Pease. And let's get to the phones, and then we're going to focus on tree squirrels for a while. First of all, John is on the line in Beaverdale at 866-780-9100. Hi, John.
Hi. Chipmunks definitely got a pass from me because they're cute. And when I grew up in Florida,
I knew there was
Iowa,
something to that theory.
Yeah, we had no chipmunks up there. So when we'd go up to Walker Bay in Minnesota and there were chipmunks, it's like they were exotic animals.
Sure.
Oh, look, they're chipmunks. Oh, anyway, my question is about tree squirrels. We got a bunch of them in the area of my neighborhood in Beaverdale. Neighbor's got an oak tree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how come you never see little squirrels? You know, it seems like they emerge from their nests fully grown.
Right. Well, they're not quite fully grown. If you saw them side by side, you'd realize, oh, these are teenagers. They are all of these critters are actually altruistic. Anyway, they're born. I can't think of the word
right
now.
Sorry, I can't help you.
they're born naked and blind and have to spend time in the nest being fed milk by their mother, brought then solid food, and they spend most of the tree squirrels are 7 to 8 weeks of age before they come out of the nest very readily. You will, if you know where the nest is, you can see them kind of getting on some branches maybe a week or two prior to that. But for the most part, by the time they get out, they are weaned, and they are ready to go around. While they still follow their mother and learn from her, pretty much they're weaned by 8 weeks of age. And so they are near adult size.
Well, and they have to be pretty capable when they're out and about, because that's a very high-skill lifestyle.
You bet. And if you miss, it's a long fall. So
and I have seen young squirrels fall from trees and die.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's
shocking. But you don't think about it happening because they are so incredibly skilled at jumping around. It's fun to watch the teenage squirrels play in the trees.
Yes, it is. They're incredibly athletic. It's only the athletic ones that survive,
right.
Unfortunately. So, yeah. But that's why, because I can't think of the word now, but I'll come up with it.
It'll come to you at 11 o'clock. So with tree squirrels, how many different kinds do we have in Iowa? Or at least how many kinds are we supposed to have in Iowa? Let's start with that question.
We have four species of tree squirrels in Iowa. We have the largest one is the fox squirrel. Next in size is the gray squirrel. Quite a bit smaller mainly in northeastern Iowa, although there are disjunct populations around Mason City and around Waterloo that I know of. We have the red squirrel, also known in some cases as jack squirrels, that sort of thing. They're quite a bit smaller. And then we do have one that people rarely see, and it's primarily in the eastern half of the state, is the southern flying squirrel. And the reason very few people see them is that they are the only one of all eight of these ground squirrel, chipmunk, and tree squirrel species. They are the only truly nocturnal squirrel of the bunch. All the rest are diurnal, meaning they're out in the daytime, or crepuscular, dawn and dusk. And but the southern flying squirrel that we have is only found at nighttime.
All right. And the other squirrels, the fox squirrel, the gray squirrel, the red squirrel, how closely related are they to each other?
Well, the red squirrel is less closely related than the gray and the fox are, but they're all similar. All of these squirrels, all eight ground squirrels and tree squirrels, are in the same family, the Sciuridae. And so they're different genera, but they're certainly in the same family.
Is there ever interbreeding?
No, there's not. Ever is a long time, Charity.
Rarely.
Certainly, it speciation has occurred someplace, but I don't know of any investigations. There may have been some. Certainly, we could trace, if we had money to do DNA studies, we might be able to see the relationships as we have been able to with lots of other species much more clearly. But to my knowledge, it has not yet been done in squirrels to see what the origin was and when the speciation occurred. But certainly, there's a lot of speciation going on, and it's still going on. Especially, it seems, among the ground squirrels, because if you go out west or you go to other countries, you'll see many other species of ground squirrels that we don't have here in Iowa. So these are primarily the prairie species we have here in Iowa. The tree squirrels are pretty widespread. Gray, fox, and red squirrels are really throughout eastern North America. And the red squirrel tends to be more northern than southern. although there are some would consider them subspecies that go a little farther south. But gray and fox are certainly very close to one another. The fox squirrel, we're talking about a 2 foot long critter, so it's a fair size, sometimes a little more. And half of that is tail. So you're still talking a 1 foot long a critter that weighs from a pound to 2 pounds, depending on the whether it's a male or female and how much fat it has, that sort of thing. So it's the largest, and it turns out to be sort of the most aggressive, where you have an overlap of the ranges of the gray squirrel and the fox squirrel. Fox squirrels almost always dominate because they're larger, and they tend to be more aggressive than the gray squirrels are, and they tend to some people would say, drive out the gray squirrels, but I think it's just situation that they're a little more suited to.
Interesting. Well, and we had a caller who wanted to help with your aphasia with
thank
words.
You.
Altricial is the word you're
altricial,
looking for.
Altricial, thank you. Yes, yes. Yeah. We precocial and altricial. So I couldn't think of either word for a moment. Precocial is when you're born like a lot of, let's say, killdeer and pheasants and quail are and chickens. They're born precocial. They hatch out of the egg and they're ready to run around within 24 hours. Altricial is when they're not. So when they're born, usually blind and certainly without feathers or fur on them. So
requiring nourishment.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. My guest today, wildlife biologist Jim Pease. And we are talking about the squirrels of Iowa. We're focusing now on tree squirrels in Iowa. And we will take your questions when we get back from our break. The number to call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. With me this hour, wildlife biologist Jim Pease. We're talking about the squirrels of Iowa and focusing now on tree squirrels, a number of different varieties in the state. And we do have a lot of stereotypes about squirrels, Jim. For one, that they eat nuts all the time. What do squirrels eat other than the black walnuts in my backyard? Oh, did we lose Jim? There you are. Hi, Jim.
There. Okay, good.
Yeah, now we can hear you. So what do squirrels eat?
I couldn't hear myself there. So they certainly do eat a lot of nuts. Acorns, hickory nuts, walnuts, pecans, if you're in an area of the state. They love those sorts of things. Why? Well, first of all, they're highly nutritious. Lots of protein, lots of oils, lots of fats, so they can compact little nutrition bundles that these nuts are. So they really can. Plus, they have teeth that their incisor teeth are very, very well suited. Strong jaw muscles. If you've ever been bit, you know how strong they can be. And they can open these nuts, even the walnuts. They have a way of prying into them and chewing through that walnut, very hard walnut shell. So the nuts are really highly nutritious for them. And of course, what they do, they tend to hide them. There have been a lot of interesting studies done on how squirrels find them. They tend to find the nuts that they've dug. I should say, first of all, that gray squirrels and fox squirrels are more random in their food caching. They will put one here and one over there and another one over there. And it turns out they still are able to find about 85% of those nuts that they bury, which is quite surprising when you think about it. I'm not sure I could find 85% of the things that I buried in the yard. But they have a very keen sense of smell. It's not just memory. It's mainly their sense of smell. They'll even burrow down in the snow so that they can be closer and will find that nut buried underneath there. And of course, the ones that they don't find means that those grow up into trees the following spring, if in fact they haven't chewed off the growing tip before they planted it, which they sometimes do. They're very important in terms of seed dispersal, and that behavior of randomly planting them around their territory is very, very important for forest.
Lots of species.
Yeah, forest regeneration in general is really important. Now, they will eat other things, particularly in years when we don't have a lot of red oaks every single year, or white oaks or bur oaks every single year. So in those sort of bad years when we've had a very late frost or, you know, a bad storm or something that really knocked down the acorn population, they turn to other things, other seed species, particularly tree seed species, everything from hackberry to cherries to maple seeds even, the ash seeds are very important to them in those tough years. So they make use of other seeds that are available. And it's another reason that you want a diverse landscape, because it allows the food supply over time to be sort of evened out by then they alter their food supply from year to year.
Well, you mentioned them sniffing through the snow, which brings up the hibernation question, because a lot of us think that squirrels hibernate, but they're not true hibernators.
No, tree squirrels are not true hibernators. In fact, they go into long periods of sleep, particularly during storms and really cold spells. They may sleep for several days in their hopeful tree cavities, because these are primarily cavity nesters. At least the successful ones are in tree cavities anyway. They may sleep up to a week or so, but then they come out and will feed on a warm day or a semi-warm day in the middle of winter to find the things that they buried. Now, interestingly, red squirrels are somewhat different. They tend to form this little diminutive squirrel, which is 8 to 9 inches long in the body, and the tail is another 5 or 6 inches long. And these are cheeky little guys. Those of our listeners who live in the areas where they have red squirrels know how cheeky they can be, and they're tough little buggers. And they will, instead of just randomly things, they tend to depend more heavily on conifers, the cone-bearing trees, pines and spruces, those sorts of things, and they tend to pick the cones when they're green, to harvest the seeds out of them, and they tend to put them in middens, middens, or pantries, if you will. So they have one or more middens that they can go to in the winter to dig out some of these cone seeds and sometimes acorns and other things as well to eat. So they'll go to the pantry, whereas gray squirrels and fox squirrels tend to have to wander a little farther over the landscape to find where they buried things.
Interesting. Well, a lot of people have similar questions, so I'm going to let Laria in West Des Moines ask it first. Hi, Laria.
Hi, Jerry.
Hi, what's your question?
My question is, I'm just curious more than anything. What about the black squirrels in Council Bluffs? I grew up there, and that's the only place I've seen black squirrels.
Right. Well, that's a great question. I'm glad somebody brought it up, because it is indeed, a lot of people have thought it's a separate species, but it is not. Black squirrels and in fact, there was a time back a number of years ago when a legislator from Council Bluffs wanted to make the black squirrel the state mammal, and a number of us told him that, gee, that was a nice idea, but it's not a separate species. It's what's called a melanism, which means a black pigment of, and it can occur in fox squirrels, but it's most common in gray squirrels. And in Council Bluffs, they're primarily gray squirrels. And it's a genetic thing that when there are, it's a recessive gene, and when you get two recessives, it becomes a dominant and that becomes expressed. And so in a given litter of gray squirrels, you might have, some that are black and some that are melanistic and some that are gray. And so they're all the same species, but and it does occur occasionally in other squirrels as well. So it can occur across the board, but it seems to be more common in gray squirrels. So
well, and I think right now the majority of the people who are asking this question have been talking about Council Bluffs, but there are black squirrels in other places around Iowa as well.
Yeah, and they tend not to be as common in general because it's the opposite of a melanism is an albinism. Okay, so that's the absence of pigment. And true albinos have white fur or feathers in the case of a bird, and pink eyes. And that actually is even less common, but it's caused by the same sort of genetic, it's a recessive gene. And albinos tend to, because of their sensitivity to the sun, because they tend to be more readily visible and thus predators find them easier, that tends to be a very, they don't tend to survive very long. On the other hand, black squirrels, melanistic squirrels, melanistic gray squirrels or fox squirrels, tends not to be a disadvantage to them. So it tends to persist in the population. And inside a city where they are often seen as quite unusual and therefore protected, especially protected, it tends to become more and more common in the population. And that's what happened in California.
Because they're surviving and, and breeding and those...
Exactly.
Recessive genes can be passed along more easily.
Exactly.
So there is a theory among some people that black squirrels don't live in rural areas, but it's just more common.
It's just more common in the city because they're a little more protected there as well. So they're not hunted in the city for one thing. So,
now, something I think that possibly this could have something to do just with how we can share photos on the internet, but it certainly seems that there are a lot more sightings of squirrels in Iowa with white or white patches. And and so those are not albino,
no.
Right?
They're a third term, and we're getting into these 50-cent words you can drop at a cocktail party and impress your friends. Leucistic is what that's called. L-E-U-C-I-S-T-I-C. Yeah, leucistic. And leucism is like albinism or melanism. It is a genetic disruption. The difference is leucistic. You may have something that is almost all white or sort of a creamy colored, but they have black eyes, and so you know immediately, or dark eyes, you know immediately it's not an albino. But it, again, it's a partial. Sometimes it's just the tails of squirrels that are white. We see this occasionally, and I've seen that in fox squirrels and in gray squirrels, and I don't know that I've seen it in red squirrels, but it probably exists. And in lots of other species, including everything from snakes to birds to mammals, it is found in all of those things. And it's simply an absence of the melanin pigment, absence of all pigments, and they're not able, the cells are, for one reason or another, not able to form it in either part of the body, or like on the tail of the squirrel, or over the whole body. So we see that leucism, it's probably even rarer than melanism or albinism.
Well, and you were talking about how there seems to be no disadvantage for black squirrels,
right.
And I can imagine gray squirrels, black squirrels, red squirrels, they're all kind of equally difficult to see if they're in a tree.
Right.
A white squirrel would tend to stand out.
Exactly. And that's why that and the fact that it's very sensitive to sun, they tend not to survive very long.
All right. Well, let's here's a question with the well-being of squirrels in mind from Marcy. We have an oak tree that's dying. There's a squirrel nest in it, and we can't decide when to take the tree down while doing the least harm to the squirrels.
Okay.
If we take it down now, will they have time to build a new winter refuge? Is the mass of leaves actually a winter nest?
Yeah.
If we cut it down in the spring, we worry about young being hurt. What should we do?
Great question. I would say, first of all, if they're definitely going to take the tree down, now's a good time, and the the squirrels will find someplace else if they're still in there. Most often, the leaf nests, particularly in an area that has lots of alternatives, if there are a lot of oaks around or lots of other trees around, lots of hollows available for them, they'll easily find or compete for other places to nest. So a squirrel in the summertime really wants to have the ideal habitat, which is inside a hollow tree. Once the litter, let's say you've got four or five in there, it gets crowded in there. They get fleas. It's hot. And so they go out and they build, particularly after they have weaned from their mother. They'll often build these leaf nests, and these leaf nests are not terribly visible in the summer, but once the leaves begin to fall, like they have the last several days with the winds we've had, once the leaves begin to fall, they're very visible. Now, are the squirrels still in there? If they can't find an overwintering site that is inside a tree, the trunk of the tree, then they may still occupy those leaf nests through the winter. It is in very dense squirrel populations or very mild winters, they will indeed use those. But most often, those are like a summer porch. They get out of that crowded, flea-bitten cavity nest and build these small summer porches, these leaf nests. And so usually they are not occupied in the winter unless the squirrel population is such in the area that all the cavities are occupied.
Now, when you talk about squirrels and their broods, how many litters can they have in a year?
One is very common, of course, and mm-hmm. Two is not uncommon. It depends where they are in the range. Farther south, two is the most common. Farther north, one is more common than two. So it depends on the year. And as we get climate change and global warming, I think we'll see two litters being more common. And again, it depends on food supply, it depends on weather, those sorts of things. And so, one to two, one being more common in the north, two being more common in the south.
All right. Sharon is on the line from Johnston. Hi, Sharon.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
I live in an apartment complex and I have a bunch of friendly squirrels around and I just love animals. So I started feeding them peanuts.
Uh-huh.
Over a year ago,
uh-huh.
And they started getting so used to me that they take peanuts out of my hand.
Right.
And I'm wondering if I'm doing more harm than good because they're depending on me to put the peanuts out, and I'm planning on feeding them as long as I'm here, but will they be able to survive without me if I happen to move?
Well, the one thing that it does, yes, they probably will survive. They'll switch to something else, or they'll find another person like you who likes to feed them. What it does do is that it makes them very, very accustomed to humans. And in the long run, if you leave, they may approach another human who may view that as weird behavior, and they may actually bite them or something like that. So I generally tend to, if you want to feed them, I would tend to feed them more from a distance. Will they find another food supply? Certainly they will if you stop feeding them. It's the hand feeding that worries me a little bit more than just feeding them.
All right. So feed them, observe them, enjoy them.
From a distance.
To touch them.
Right. Right.
All right. Exactly. Well, and a lot of people I know get frustrated because squirrels eat at their bird feeders.
Oh, yeah.
But they are so fun to watch. I mean, we have a caller who we can't get to who's talking about how his squirrel will jump off the deck to get to the bird feeder that's 20 feet in the air.
Yep.
They really can do the most extraordinary things.
The so-called squirrel-proof feeder, squirrel-proof, has yet to be found. I have several ways of keeping the majority of the squirrels out of my bird feeders, but not all of them. They tend to figure out a way. There seem to be some smart ones among them, some engineers among them, if you will, that find a way to get into that feeder. And it's always a great challenge.
and hopefully a lot of fun to watch.
That's
although
right.
I know that a lot of people have frustrating
right.
experiences with it. Well, Jim Pease, I think we could have talked about squirrels for 2 hours.
Absolutely.
Another time.
Thank you.
Jim Pease, wildlife biologist. He's also a consultant in the Ames area these days and emeritus professor at Iowa State University. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth. We have production assistance from Patrick Linane. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.